There's so many new developments, it's hard to figure out how to cram it all into a short post. The morning after I spoke with my fiancé, Faye, on the satellite phone, and then was visited by the thing that mimics our voices, I got a call from Richard and Jason. In case you don't remember, they're the two best friends, and they're staying at my place taking care of Faye when I'm gone. They're the only people that I trust. Richard stays up very late and sleeps in the morning, kind of like what I'm doing now. He does this for two reasons. One, to work on his art commissions, and two, to make sure that Faye doesn't stab everyone to death and burn the house down in her sleep. The guys report that she's behaving quite normally and feeling good or being productive during the day. But then at night, she is unpredictable and weird. I feel like her soul is being cleaved in half. The two distinct sets of behavior are drifting farther from each other every day. Around 1 a.m. that night, Richard heard the voice of a young child mumbling incoherently. He's up to speed on all the unusual experiences that have been plaguing my fiancé and me, so he immediately got up to investigate. He looked out the kitchen window, which faces the same part of the forest where I saw the man mimicking Faye's sleepwalking movements. Richard didn't find anything, so he walked a circle around the house and realized that the sound was coming from our bedroom window. He went inside and woke Jason up. They stood outside the bedroom window listening. They claimed they heard the distinct sound of a child whispering, softly singing. Bet you can guess the song. I'm a naked soul, Miadu. The song Faye and I heard outside the cabin on our second night, sung in a child's voice. Both of these dudes are super ripped climbing enthusiasts, and they said that they had never been so creeped out in their entire lives. Jason knocked on the door and said, Faye, who's in there? I promptly heard the child say, shh, and whisper something inaudible. Richard pushed the door open. He said that Faye was standing in the corner of the room in the dark, facing the wall. She was standing up on her toes, dragging her hands and nails down the wall, talking to herself, with her back turned to the guys. She said, oh, their skin is perfect. Which one put him down in the hall? Richard saw something out the window, hurried over to it. Jason stepped inside the room and reached out to put a hand on Faye's shoulder, but she whirled around quickly and covered her face with her hands. Her eyes were open, which is unusual for when she sleepwalks, and then, these are the exact words Jason used. She started speaking in the voice of a little kid. She made whining and crying sounds and rocked back and forth on her feet, cradling her arms as though she held a child. She turned around and started scratching at the wall again, still whispering, and that kid's voice saying things like, it's Faye. I can see you. Are you up in the trees or down in the hall? Then she started singing again. Richard ran down the stairs and out the front door, barreling towards the tree line. From the window, he had seen a small child walking around on its tiptoes, flailing its arms up in the air. On the phone, he told me that he could hear it singing while he watched it from the window. When Richard got to about 20 yards away from the kid, it took off running on the balls of its feet, heading straight into the trees. Richard stayed in pursuit and went in after it. It was too dark for him to follow, and he lost the kid after a few moments. He wandered around for a few minutes, searching the area, and eventually heard the voice of an adult male. Richard says he walked a few steps deeper into the grove and saw a huge man standing about 30 feet away, completely naked, looking up into the trees. There were lacerations or dark pockmarks of some kind all over his body. Richard's about 6'1", 210 pounds, a bulky, muscular guy. He said this dude was way bigger than him. He said the man was perfectly still for several seconds, then started rolling his head around, cracking his neck loudly, started making gurgling and mumbling sounds. I guess Rich was paralyzed with fear because he claims he stood there for an entire minute or more before running like hell back to the house. As he turned to get out of there, the man let out a long, as he did, his voice transformed. It became my voice. Richard said that the thing in the woods called out with my voice several times as he fled, wailing, "Please help me. They're going to kill me tonight. They're going to kill me tonight." Jason says that he didn't hear or see anything out the window, only Richard running back inside. Ghost white with terror. He said Richard actually cried. Well, they talked in the living room, face set at the top of the stairs, just watching wide awake, with a little smile on her face. The next morning, they took her to a psychiatric appointment. The first that she had ever had. I'll hopefully hear back on that soon. It kills me that I'm not there with her now. I'm stuck at Pike's Peak. It's like this place doesn't want me to leave. The ranger station shut down the entire road network in the mountain because of this huge blizzard that rolled in. And there's avalanche warnings. But my road up here is completely iced over. One part of it has a snow collapse, this mini avalanche. Shut up, I'm from California, where God pays attention. I'm in contact with a ranger. His name's Greg. Just like Faye's dad. That's why I avoid referring to him by that name up till now. He assures me that they're working on getting the roads cleared every time that it stops snowing. I missed my flight, but thankfully they gave me a voucher so I can just roll into the airport whenever I can. Yeah, I have enough food to feed an army. The electricity here is surprisingly reliable, so I'm warm. The Wi-Fi dips out, honestly, for like 5 to 10 hours at a time, though. I'm working on Donkey Kong Country 2, Secret of Mana on the SNES, and writing about my experiences here in my spare time. I also slipped on the icy porch steps and fell on my side, so I've got an enormous bruise and it hurts like a bitch. Only when I breathe, so I got that going for me. One of the guys asked me if the cabin has a basement, and I'd never thought to check. Outside under the snowpack, and halfway covered with old chopped wood, I found a little locked door. Key was in the kitchen cupboard, and it turns out there's a decent-sized cellar under the house. Down inside, I found a ton of creepy shit. And there's a bundle of long black hair, several dozen jars of some rotten, mutant-looking shit, tons of old books from the 60s and 70s, lots of porno mags. There's also a lot of sticks and yarn, all the material necessary to make a dream catcher, like the one hanging at the tree line behind the cabin. I didn't touch anything. I just nope straight out of there. I've been thinking about something. Something that someone had said to me the other day, which was, have you considered that it's not a dream catcher at all? I mean, and he's right. I'm no expert on Native American symbology or artifacts. It just looks kind of like a dream catcher to me. So I've been calling it one all this time. Tiwe, the Pueblo friend of the ranger, he didn't call it that. He just said to leave it alone. I'm wondering if that thing attracts the imposter instead of keeping it away. It could mark the house. I mean, I kind of want to move it for one night to see what happens. After all, T-Way blessed the entire cabin, so I feel safe. And I have a 357 Magnum in case leaves don't protect me. At about 9:30 a.m., there was a knock on the door. I grabbed the gun, suspecting another encounter with the imposter. It was lightly snowing and gloomy, so I figured the sun was blocking enough that the creature would be willing to come out of the woods. But then I heard familiar voices talking cheerfully. I looked out the window, and to my surprise, it was T-Way and his son Nathan. These badass motherfuckers that hiked up from the ranger station in the snow to check on me. I let them in, and they made tea. I can't tell you how happy I was to see them. T-Way brought me his own dream catcher. It was one that he had made specifically for me and told me that I should hang it beside the creepy one. Very colorful one, and it's really ornate. I could tell that he spent a lot of time on it. It's got two beautiful hawk feathers dangling off of it, which Nathan says represents freedom and unboundedness. He reiterated the importance of finding the engagement ring that Faye had lost and blessed the house once again. I tried to get them to stay longer, but they had to get back down the mountain before the storm picked up. He told me that I should come with them. We all knew I wouldn't. If I left with them, I'd be leaving Greg's truck, and I'd never have found what I come back for. He said goodbye. T-Way hugged me. Yeah, I wish that guy was my grandpa. I took a nap after they left. I figured out how to sleep without being interrupted by the goddamn voices in the forest. From 9 a.m. to 3 p.m., it's pretty quiet outside, so I napped on and off. But something really, really bad happened this time. I woke up, opening the bathroom window. I've never sleepwalked. Never before in my entire life. Faye's been sleeping next to me for 5 years, and she says I don't move, I don't speak, I don't snore, I don't even steal sheets. I'm the most polite bed buddy on earth. But when I came to, I was standing next to the toilet, both hands prying the frozen window open. It was about 2 inches up, and the freezing cold wind on my fingers is what woke me up. I slammed it shut again, and checked all the windows, ensuring that they'd all been locked and sealed tight. Then I went back to bed. I dragged one of the living room chairs up into the bedroom with me and propped it against the door so that I'd knock it over if I got up again. This did not work. At around 1 p.m., I woke up standing at the front door and found myself pulling it open. The loud groans it issued were what snapped me out of my stupor. I slammed the door shut and looked out the window next to it, praying nothing was out there waiting for me at the tree line. I saw nothing. Then I remembered that I'd had a dream. Images of a huge hole carved into the mountain surface at my... It was in my mind. Snow and branches were caked all around the mouth of the entrance, and an impossible, yawning blackness emanated from within. In the dream, I just kind of stood there, gazing into the vacant face of the deep, listening to Faye's weakened cries. I sat down on the couch and just sort of cried for about a half an hour. I thought about what our lives had become, and now how badly I missed her. I thought about all of the dreams that we had of our future, the things that can never be if I don't figure out how to save her. I thought about all the promises I'd never keep if I die up here. I decided it would be best to hang the dreamcatcher sooner than later, because the clouds broke for a while and it was fantastically bright out. I got geared up and trudged across the snow with T-Way's gift and hung it on a branch about 3 feet away from the evil-looking one. And that's when I saw it. Faye's engagement ring. It was dangling right there, right in front of me, as if to tease me. Someone had woven it into the strings of the dreamcatcher. I stood there for a long time, right between the two objects. I couldn't figure out if some benevolent force was giving me a break or if I was being taunted by whatever beings had haunted my footsteps ever since I arrived on the mountain. Retrieving the ring would require me not only to touch, but destroy the creepy dreamcatcher. I had the thought to come here and ask what I should do, but I feared that if I left even for 1 second, the ring would be gone when I got back. So I tried to solve the riddle myself. You know, how I wish I'd brought that satellite phone out with me. After a few minutes of standing there, I reasoned that T-Way's dreamcatcher would probably do just as well in protecting me, if in fact that was the function of the original one. I also figured that if it was cursed or something, touching it couldn't actually be worse than leaving the ring there and allowing Faye to be completely consumed by her madness. If the ring has anything to do with the creatures who are controlling Faye and me while we sleep, then getting it back is priority over not touching the weird stuff in the woods. So that's what I did. I broke the brittle thing apart and I took my goddamn ring back. What else could I have done? And as if on cue, I noticed something out of the corner of my eye. It was a person standing in the snow beside a tree, about 12 feet from my left side. I was so scared, I didn't look directly at him. I just watched him in my periphery and prayed that he hadn't noticed me. It was a man, black and gray hair and dark clothes, facing away from me. His head was tilted all the way back, and he was looking way up at the tops of the trees. His limbs looked mangled and bent and elongated. Even without looking right at him, I slid the ring into my pocket as slowly as I could, trying not to make a sound as I did. The man hobbled around and faced me. I really didn't want to look now. I slammed my eyes shut. I knew he was looking at me. I could feel his gaze on me. He started gurgling and making throaty noises, and said in a voice so threatening I can't even begin to describe,
"Felix, I know you. Felix, I know you. Felix, I know you."
Over and over and over. I took off running and screaming like a bat out of hell. I screamed all the way back to the fucking cabin. I barricaded the front door with a couch and burned up half the sage that I had left. I even prayed like an actual prayer. I haven't done that since I was 15 years old. I'm really struggling to write this last part. It's taken me hours to finish this entry because I keep getting up to distract myself. The ranger isn't answering his phone, and nobody at the station. Maybe the power's out. I don't know what I did by breaking that dream catcher. I don't know what tonight's going to be like, but Faye, if you ever hear this, if something happens to me, don't forget your tenderness, your softened skin. All I needed. Your love is my tourniquet. You have to say this even though I desperately want it not to be true. The man I saw was Tiwei.